right, well, from the busy Boston streets, we're moving on to the ice at the TD Garden, or what would be ice, except for the fact that the Bruins and all the other NHL teams are currently in lockout just weeks before the season starts. Depending on who you ask, the cost to local businesses could be fairly dramatic. We saw that when the strike took place, or the lockout took place 5 or 6 years ago. Also, the NFL season is underway with substitute referees officiating games, and fans are beginning to get upset about some blown calls and game delays and all that stuff. Anyway, here to talk through all that drama over strikes and lockouts is Roger Abrams. He's a professor of law at Northeastern University. He's also the author of Sports Justice, The Law and Business of Sports. Welcome, Roger.
How are you, Emily?
Hey, I'm great.
I wish our sports were in as good a condition as you are.
I know. Well, Roger, we haven't had you in to talk about the Red Sox this season. And I think there's a good reason why.
you can only take so much. I'm told that the season ends. Is that true?
Well, when does it end? Please
tell
me.
Soon.
I usually had gotten sort of addicted to looking at the box scores and all that. I haven't checked in weeks and weeks. And I did look today, and 16 and a half games out or something like that.
It is dreadful, but at least some of the teams are actually playing, as opposed to what's going to happen in hockey where we're not going to see a lot of Bruins.
Yeah, I mean, so the owners and the players are about $600 million off, which is fairly significant. The season is supposed to start, I think, October 11th, and they haven't even established any kind of a negotiation. What is the big issue here anyway?
Well, you know, there's lots of things going on. First of all, there is a new head of the Players Union, Don Fair, who was the longtime head of the Baseball Players Union. Don explained he was tired and needed time off, and then he left his position in baseball and quickly took a new one in hockey, which, if anything, is more difficult. And I have a feeling part of what this is all about is Gary Bettman wants to establish his authority when it comes to the game that he's supposed to run. He's the commissioner.
Now, who is he again?
He is the commissioner of the National Hockey League. And has proven to be a really tough guy when it comes to negotiations.
What are the stumbling blocks?
The stumbling blocks are, first of all, I think there's personalities involved. Believe it or not, money is fungible, but personalities are not. And that's part of it. The second stumbling block is that the owners are not ready to adopt the approach that Fair was able to use in baseball, and that he's proposed to the hockey owners, and that is revenue sharing. That apparently they're not willing to support the poorer franchises with the money coming from the richer franchises in the same way as Don was able to get that done in baseball. And then, of course, what the owners want is to pay less money. Certainly understandable. Who knows whether hockey players are overpaid, but this was a clearly foreseeable lockout, and we've got it.
It was a disaster. I guess it was 8 years ago that the last one was the 2004-05 season, and what really took a hit was the TV ratings the following year. People had forgotten about hockey and tuned out. It came back in recent years.
Outside of natural markets, like, of course, all of Canada and New York and Boston and Chicago, hockey is still not native to this country. And, you know, we have a franchise in Phoenix, but who in Phoenix plays hockey? And so you don't have the same rootedness that you have in football and basketball and
baseball.
Yeah. And so
people don't miss it when it goes away.
Well, we will miss it.
Well, you speak for yourself.
Okay. I think the Bruins fans will miss it. It's a really good club, and you know, it's won the Stanley Cup in recent years, and so it's exciting. And not only will the fans, some fans in some places miss it, but a lot of people will lose a lot of money. And those primarily will not be the players. The players many of them have signed with European clubs.
They're going to be playing anyway.
They're going to be playing anyway. They won't be making their full NHL salaries, But they're not going to be on food lines. They're going to be just fine. But I'm worried about everyone else who is affected by this. But of course,
it's the whole thing with the vendors and all the people around the.
It's vendors. It's parkings. It's the local bar. It's the local 7-Eleven. It's it brings 20,000-25,000 people to downtown Boston for each of 40 games, and those are gone. And of course, the TD Garden cannot replace those by bringing in Mariah Carey. It just doesn't work that way.
No, exactly.
And so it will hurt.
So there's no chance they're going to make the season opener then October 11th.
It of course is possible. It might require divine intervention, but other than prayer, I can't think of a good way to be optimistic about this. And on the other hand, one thing you do have is you have talented people on both sides who have done this before. There are no rookies at the table, even if Don Fehr is new in hockey land. They know how to negotiate. They know how to reach agreements. But until someone is hurting, why give? And, of course, between now and the start of the season, no one's going to give anything.
I know, but aren't you a little surprised that they let it go this far, this long, considering what did happen 8 years ago?
I'm not surprised. Negotiations happen the night before. There is a catastrophe about to happen.
Yeah, I guess you're right.
Why do I have to give something now? I'm not going to lose anything for a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
And so we're not going to see anything for a little while in terms of any movement. In fact, there's even some discussion that both sides are going to move back to their prior positions. They had moved a little bit towards each other, but they're still so far apart. And, of course, this is also about the question is who runs the game. And that is, it's very important. There's a lot of pride at stake in bargaining because there's more than enough money to go around for everybody.
Well, the NBA did this last year, too, and they ended up doing a short season. Of course, hockey is an endless season, too. But they don't play as many games, but it's a long season. So even if it's truncated.
Yeah, I think that's fine. I mean, I don't mind if it doesn't start until after the Super Bowl. That would be great.
Yeah, so when it's actually cold.
Yeah, when it's cold and, you said that there won't be any ice at the Garden. There'll be ice. There'll just be no one on it.
Oh, they have to make the ice, I guess, just in case.
Yeah, they have to make the ice. And there'll be ice shows kinds of things. And maybe we can all go down and skate. But I don't think we're going to see any good body checks.
All right, I'm talking to Roger Abrams, professor of law at Northeastern University, also the author of Sports Justice. So, Roger, what's your take on the NFL substitute referees? I mean, I was at the game Sunday in Foxborough. It just seemed to me that there were an endless number of referee calls. Maybe it was just openings, but it just seemed like I didn't think there were necessarily really bad calls, but it was just like a lot of them.
Well, Emily, I'm thinking that next week they'll call you and they'll call me.
We'd be just as good.
I can do this offline.
You would be better.
We would be terrific, and we'd have a nice discussion in the meanwhile, because they have...
I wouldn't be asking the players to play on my fantasy team. NFL substitute refs had come on to somebody about his fantasy team. It's like, what?
I mean, the big mistakes have been very well publicized. I think people during the first week of the regular season were willing to give these, what do they call them, replacements.
Yeah.
Labor people call them scabs.
Yeah, I know.
They were willing to give them the benefit of the doubt for 1 week. But now, it's getting dangerous. This is not a polite game to play. It's not chess on a Sunday afternoon. These are men, very large men, who put their lives on the line, and they will take advantage of the fact that these referees are not going to call certain penalties. The first time there is a significant injury of a marquee player as a result of bad refereeing. I mean, not the terrible thing that happened to Garnett.
Like unnecessary roughness or something?
No, something where they're really piling on and are doing the New Orleans Saint bounty stuff without money being paid. then the public uproar will be tremendous. Otherwise, frankly, the networks still are getting the same number of people to to come in. You went to the game. I'd go to the game if I could find a place to park.
I was unaware until I got there that it was substitute or replacement
referees. And, you couldn't really most of the game you can't really tell. Although the guys who are down on the field say they can tell immediately.
Yeah.
And they know that no one is watching what they're doing. I can't, unless there is pressure from a third party, and it's not enough that it's Dan Shaughnessy. It has to be someone outside of the sports group who says, enough with this. Even the TV networks putting pressure. Because it, as opposed to hockey, there is not a lot of money involved here.
Yeah, I can't imagine. But once again, like the NHL, this is an NFL lockout. What is the issue here? Same thing?
Right. And the issue here is salary and pensions. Mm-hmm. These guys, alone among referees in professional sports, are part-timers. They have
16 weekends a year or whatever.
That's right. They do this and they get paid per game, maybe $10,000 per game.
Oh, do you think they get that much?
They do.
Really?
And as we can tell now, they're worth it because they're really good.
Yeah.
And
you got to really know the rules.
but you're dealing with an industry that this year may earn $10 billion. That's with a B, billion dollars. And this is pin money to pay these guys. Once again, I think there's power and authority on the line, and unless some outsider comes in, we're doomed to have to put up with this stuff.
Like
the TV networks.
Oh,
the TV networks.
So we're not going to carry this foolishness anymore, unless you.
Well, they get so much money from NBC, CBS, and Fox that any of those folks could call up Roger Goodell and say, settle this damn thing, please, or settle it or else.
Maybe they already have.
Maybe they have.
Well, the or else is the key. But who is not going to carry a game?
Oh, no, they'll carry the games.
So what's the or else?
The or else is we will remember that you've given us a substandard product in the past when we renegotiate with you in the future. Not an enormous pressure. But right now, there's no pressure except from sports writers.
It's starting.
It is starting. And I was just watching online. They're beginning to collect all the incidents.
Yeah, I saw that.
I'm afraid I'm kind of down in the dumps on this one, too. But, I'll feel better as long as the Patriots win.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Roger Abrams, thanks again for checking in.
My pleasure, Emily.
All right, and Kelly Crossley is bumbling away here, putting her headsets on, and she's back in Studio 3.
Emily, I'm going to play some tape to set up our next conversation.
All right.
My name is John!
My name is John!
I just got laid off from my job!
I just got laid off from my job!
I had to move back in with my parents!
I had to move back in with my parents!
I'm 25!
Of course, that was what Occupy Wall Street sounded like in its infancy, the human microphone. This week, it celebrated its one-year anniversary. We're going to look at what it's accomplished and where it's headed. What's your take on Occupy?
I kind of miss them.
Yeah, okay. All right, well, some of them are still around. I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Emily Rooney. This is Boston Public Radio.